The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. In every car and tractor, you're going to find oil. Every automobile, even the clothing you wear, the pens or pencils in your pocket, very likely the glasses you wear, the rims, and everything that you're familiar with in your daily way of life could involve the use of oil. Petrochemicals, about a quarter of the labor force of the United States engaged in the production of fertilizers, pesticides, herbicides, of all types of chemicals. Would you believe that they are found even in pills people take in dieting? Would you believe even some of the pain relievers you see advertised on television have petrochemicals and therefore an oil base? Practically everywhere you look, even the things you put on your head for your hair and in soaps and everything that we use, we'll find petrochemicals and oil. Almost behind every single little tiny workshop to every gigantic, huge, burgeoning, booming plant or industry, you find oil. Somewhere behind the American space race, even television, oil. Behind fertilizers, drugs, chemicals, synthetic textiles, fabrics that we wear, and thousands of products, oil. Our plastic society, the plastic bags and wrappers that we use. Again, oil. Always taken for granted by the United States, wasn't it? It's ours, it's there, it's underneath the soil, it belongs to us. By the vast oil fields of Texas, the oil fields even up in states like Wyoming, out in Southern California, we always took it for granted. Aren't we the great nation that has such bounteous blessings of the deep and of the fantastic harvests of our grain belt? Where 1 square mile of Iowa, if it ended up somewhere in the sub-Sahara, would be a national park, or better yet, they could skim it about an inch deep and spread it over 10 or 20 miles and grow crops on it. But we have it coming to us. We take it for granted. Oil is ours, and it's cheap, and it shouldn't cost more than 10 or 15 or 20 cents a gallon. And when it costs more than that, we become enraged. Well, suddenly, the whole story of the world revolves around oil. Suddenly, it's a lot more than a lot of Indians becoming rich on a reservation in Oklahoma, staggering into town in their Cadillacs and cigars. No longer is it the black gold that touched off some rushes into wealthy areas in the United States, not unlike a gold rush. Now today, in the short period of time, beginning in late autumn of 1973 to the beginning of 1975, the entire world has been turned upside down over oil. A major economic and political dislocation. The most unbelievable change in the history of the world has occurred in about a year and a half as a direct result of the Arab oil embargo and the quadrupling of oil prices. Now today a battle of words is raging back and forth. Earlier the Shah of Iran said we will not be able to sit still and have people wag their fingers at us. Angry exchanges were taking place back and forth as a result of the Arab oil increases and the reaction of Western Europe, of Japan, of the United States, and of course you know by now that when reporters went to Mr. Kissinger to find out whether or not he really did say something about possible intervention of the United States and the use of force in the Middle East, he could only answer, well, yes, he might have said that, but he meant in the gravest emergency. Now, as a result of that story, which came out in a Business Week magazine in the United States, in which Mr. Kissinger spoke very guardedly, there has been a blazing, inflammatory reaction in all the Arab world to Mr. Kissinger's statement. From Beirut, the Arab world reacted angrily to Secretary of State Henry A. Kissinger's statement that the United States would intervene militarily against Middle East oil producers if they threatened strangulation of the industrialized world. It's interesting, isn't it? It's all right, you see, if the Arabs threaten strangulation of the West. The West is not supposed to react with a statement of its own. If the Arabs say, we will bury you, much like Nikita Khrushchev once said, we will see the complete economic collapse of the West, the Arabs said. They said, in the event of any further problems or in the event of an alleged discovery of a conspiracy between the Israelis and the United States for armed intervention in the East, we would blow up our oil wells first. Or maybe we would simply just impose a complete embargo upon all the world. Then the fault and the blame would lie squarely at the door of the United States. Well, Mr. Kissinger reacted to that with his statement. that in a grave emergency it was probably possible that force could be used. Well, his comments were published in that magazine, and a storm of editorial and government protests came out in everywhere from Saudi Arabia to Iraq, including Kuwait, Lebanon, and Libya. In Algiers, Algerian President Wari Boumediene, if that's the way you pronounce that name, said American military intervention against any Middle East oil-producing country would be aggression against the entire Arab world and would lead to destruction of the oil fields. A member of the Kuwaiti cabinet told Egypt's official Middle East news agency, and I quote, "American organs have been making such threats frequently, so it is now established in people's minds that their purpose is to check the freedom of oil producers to set a just price for their oil," end quote. And a semi-official Cairo newspaper said Kissinger's threats were evidence of a U.S.-Israeli conspiracy to attack the Arabs. In Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, the newspaper Al-Nadwa advised Washington to, quote, "stop making threats and stop blaming the oil producers for the economic crisis in the world." It urged an all-exporting countries like OPEC, 80% of whom are Arab, or all of the oil-exporting countries to get together to ask the United States to lower the prices of its commodities. Isn't that incredible? Now, everyone, of course, will recall that the Arabs were predicted as late as midsummer of 1973 never to get together to use their oil as a political weapon. They were too divided. There were too many problems between and among the Arab states themselves. There was the problem between the Palestinians and all the offshoots of them, including the Al-Fatah, and King of Jordan, King Hussein. At some time or another in the recent years, there have been skirmishes and even major all-out war between regular troops of King Hussein's Jordanian army and members of the Palestinian organizations. They weren't able to work concertedly. The very fact that Arabs fought among themselves and couldn't agree among themselves was one of the greatest things that helped Israel survive through these many years. Suddenly, all of that seems to have changed. Now the Arabs were acting concertedly and unitedly and together. Now they decided, unitedly, to impose a quadrupling and then another price hike and then another price hike on the transfer of money from the big spenders to the big earners. And so we have seen in the last months of our lives, especially in the year 1974, the greatest, most massive outflow of dollars, of money of all sorts, from the West, and the most massive influx to the East in the history of all the world. For example, in 1972, the United States was spending $3.9 billion for importing oil. In 1974, we spent $24 billion to import oil. In 1972, Saudi Arabia was earning $2.8 billion for the oil she sold. In 1974, Saudi Arabia earned $28.9 billion. This unbelievable turn of events has turned the entirety of the world upside down. Japan in 1972 spent nearly $4 billion to import oil. In 1974, Japan had to spend $18 billion. And Iran earned about $2.5 billion in 1972. But she earned about $20.9, almost $21 billion in 1974. The Arab increases now, even in the surpluses, over and beyond what they pay for, is so incredible you just can't believe it. From about a $5 billion surplus in 1973, they have gone up to over $65 billion in 1974. So 1974 was an absolutely pivotal year that literally saw the decline of old powers, old alliances, old ideas, old philosophies, ways of doing things, the entire power structure of the world, and it saw the rise of a lot of new ones. In the middle of 1973, I doubt if there was an American on the street that could have told you where Bahrain was, with the exception of some few people who might have been there. Or Dubai, or Abu Dhabi. What are those? People? Places? Things? What are they? People wouldn't have known. Now suddenly leaping into prominence into world news are some little-known, medieval, feudal states with virtually no roads, no modern buildings in many cases, and almost an impossibility to even modernize those countries. And in some cases, government reluctance to do so and admission that they don't even know how to recycle or how to spend the unbelievable amount of wealth that is tumbling into those parts of the world. That's all happened so rapidly and so fast. This part of the world, the Middle East, is destined to be the focal point of world attention from now on out. Now, it isn't a lot of fun to say I told you so. That doesn't matter one way or the other, but the point is I did. I can go back and resurrect the master copies of tapes of broadcasts I made throughout the period of Vietnam, and especially in the mid-60s, where I would come on this program and I would say to people, and I know many of them were skeptical, I said, in the few years ahead of us, just around the corner, the news from the Middle East is going to pale into insignificance, American concern over Vietnam. And I said that more than 100 times. I said it in pulpits. I said it in articles. I said it over this broadcast. And I said it on the telecast. Why did I say it? Because about a third of the prophecies of the Bible that have to do with the Middle East, that have to do with the very focal point of world attention right now, zoom right in on Israel, the Arab states, the Middle East, and they even mention oil. I have understood that the Bible is a Middle Eastern book, that it's written from the perspective and the point of view ethnically, historically, that it's written religiously and politically, if you choose, from the point of view of the Middle East, looking out at the rest of the world from that perspective. And the United States is identified in the Bible in prophecies. We're identified by ancient names. That isn't even really important to argue over with people. They say, oh, that's some doctrine they can't believe in. All right, forget that part of it. The point is that the Middle East is easily identified. The nation of Egypt is a little hard to miss when it's mentioned by name. And it does talk about a king of the north and a king of the south. It talks about a jostling, a shoving, a pushing match that gets underway between a king of the north and a king of the south. Now, they're not just one king there. There are several kings, but even the Shah of Iran, and the full name of that title means King of Kings, kind of interesting. And there is, of course, King Faisal, and there's King Hussein, kings of these oil-rich countries. Jordan is not oil-rich, but some of the other countries nearby certainly are. And here is this prophecy, this amazing prophecy of the book of Daniel. It's one of the most detailed of all the Bible. That talks about the time of the end and how the king of the south is going to push at a king of the north who will come with great fury, it says, to enter into the countries and overflow and pass over, and shall also enter into the glorious land. And many countries shall be overthrown, including, it says, the land of Egypt. And it goes on to say in verse 43, he will have power over the treasures of gold and of silver. Talking about Egypt and treasures of gold and silver, Arab countries, the Middle East, treasures of gold and silver. Listen, as early as late August of 1973, you couldn't really understand that scripture as meaning literally and specifically a transfer of wealth. Gold and silver, you might have said, well, it might mean oil. No, it might mean exactly what it says, what it might mean. It might mean gold and silver. There has been the most unprecedented transfer of money in the history of the world that has taken place since that time. You see, the producing nations take from a barrel of oil less than $1 per barrel at the start of this decade of the 1970s was lifted from $1.99 before the Arab-Israeli War, the Yom Kippur War, to $3.44 at the end of 1973 to more than $10 at the end of 1974. And the result is simply what I've been saying, the greatest transfer of wealth in all the history of humanity. The 13 OPEC countries earned $112 billion from the rest of the world last year, and because they couldn't even begin to spend it all, they ran up a payment surplus of $60 billion. Now that's shaken the entire world economic system. The entire monetary system, the international financial system has been weakened. It's been struck by a near-death blow. The troubled economies of the oil importers in deep trouble today, one after another. Huge deficits. Italy, Britain, the sick man of Europe, and of course many others, big ones, giants, are hurting very badly. Japan, Western Germany, so many other countries are hurting very badly. Now, most favored in all of this so far has been the Arab countries. Now there's an exchange of words back and forth about the possibility of military intervention in the Middle East. Isn't it strange how these Bible prophecies focus in on that eventuality, too? Talking apparently about a European power. Now, the United States says that it might intervene in the case of the gravest emergency. I don't know if we would or not. I know that at least Mr. Kissinger made the statement. And I know, as you do if you read the news, that all the Arabs reacted very violently against it. But what people don't realize is that Bible prophecy predicts there will come armed intervention in the Middle East, but from a series of many, many very basic reasons people are overlooking. Every time you read of the Israeli-Arab situation, when you read of hostility, you hear the Israeli leaders talking about the Arabs who want to exterminate the little Israeli nation. You read about the Israelis who say they want to negotiate directly or they want this or that. You read about the Egyptians and others who claim that the Israelis aren't willing to negotiate and they're not willing to come to terms, they're not willing to withdraw from the areas that they grabbed from the Arabs in the 1967 war. And they're not willing to abide by Resolution 242. You hear all this copy, but what don't you hear? What you don't hear is that that is as much a religious struggle as any other kind of a struggle. You almost never see the religious aspect brought out. The fact of a gigantic amount of vituperous, venomous hatred between the religion of Islam and the religion of Judaism. The fact that both of them feel, as even do the so-called Christians of the world, that they have the prior claim to the holy places of the city of Jerusalem. Oil is a major factor. Money is a gigantic factor. So is the religious aspect. They say that Anwar Sadat actually has calluses on his forehead. Maybe you read that. They say that he's got a kind of a red spot, kind of a spot that is always chafed or rough or calloused on his forehead. Because the people of Islam bow several times a day with their heads pressed right against a prayer carpet or a rug or something, and they do this religiously. They're tremendously devout people in that sense. You almost never see that discussed, but you do see it discussed in the Bible. Jesus Christ of Nazareth said, "Then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains," when he described armies surrounding Jerusalem. And the Bible also describes there will come a great religious leader claiming the very powers of God, claiming to be a representative of Jesus Christ, maybe even appropriating to himself, according to the 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter, the very titles of God himself, claiming that he is God, sitting in a temple as if he is God, it says, having the power to produce great miracles in the sight of people, literal miracles that begin to happen. It says there is going to be then the combination of a religious and a political move into the Middle East. The Bible says so. Christ says so. The Bible gets very specific. I happen to believe, happen to know, happen to be able to prove to anybody whose mind is open. I can't to people who just scoff and say, oh no, you can't, and forget it at that. If you want to write for the book that's called The United States and British Commonwealth in Prophecy, you can see what I feel is absolute proof that Ephraim of ancient Bible prophecy is Britain, the United Kingdom. And that Manasseh is the United States, that we are the lost house of Israel. Sounds strange, doesn't it? Well, that's fine. You can disbelieve that, and hopefully you can disagree without being disagreeable about it. It doesn't really matter so far as the prophecies that are occurring. That won't change anything. Your disbelief or belief, my disbelief or belief, won't change anything. It won't change what the Bible says is going to happen. But listen to this prophecy of the 12th chapter of Hosea. After God describes the exact problems happening right now to Britain, gray hairs here and there upon him, and he knows it not, his strength being drained away, and he looks for hope from the East and from Europe, it says, Ephraim compasses me about daily with lies. In chapter 12 and verse 1, it says, Ephraim feeds on wind, listening for rumor, hopefully, looking toward the East. It says he follows after the east wind. Interesting, looking away and out even from the area of ancient Israel, Ephraim in its area of the earth there, the way those northern tribes were divided up in the territorial portion that they occupied, the east wind meant the desert Araba. Any student of the Bible knows that. The east wind, spoken of from the Bible point of view, means the desert out there to the east, and those winds that came out of the desert. So this Bible analogy is likening it to listening to what is happening in those oil-producing nations of today. He daily increases lies and desolation. They do make a covenant with the Assyrians. Isn't it interesting? Assyria is Germany. It says they make a covenant. Britain will make a covenant with Germany. Britain and Germany are together. Euratom, European Coal Steel Community, the common market. It goes on to say, and they do make a covenant with the Assyrians, and oil is carried through Egypt. Through is the better translation, according to most references. The King James says into. Isn't it also interesting today that Egypt is now opening, widening, improving the facilities of the Suez Canal and hopes to immediately begin earning a tremendous amount of additional revenue by allowing oil to flow once again through the Suez Canal? Here in this whole book of Hosea is a tremendous prophecy about what's happening in Great Britain. It zeroes in on the Middle East, even talks about Britain making an alliance, an agreement of some kind with Germany, and talks about oil flowing through Egypt. Jesus says in the very famous and most pivotal prophecy of all, when you see armies surrounding Jerusalem, then know the desolation thereof is nigh. And Daniel, the 11th chapter, talks about a jostling from a king of the south to the king of the north, and then armed intervention in that area. And the Apostle Paul in 2 Thessalonians 2 says it will even have a gigantic religious significance. And now we see, right in the beginning of 1975, the whole world's attention glued on the Middle East. And I have said literally hundreds of times all through the 60s that the Middle East would soon pale into absolute insignificance, our concern over the war in Vietnam. And that was prophetic, and that's come to pass. Now I want to take you to Jerusalem for a report from On the Spot of the recent worry, and that's what's happening with this Arab Summit conference, the fact of continued terrorism in a situation that is neither war nor peace, and the mysterious postponement of the visit by Communist Party boss Brezhnev down into Cairo, and what is apparently going on down in the Middle East right now. Now from Jerusalem, my son Mark Armstrong.
Mark Armstrong, Jerusalem. Many Israeli and American officials viewed the postponement of Soviet Party Chief Brezhnev's visit to Cairo as being the result of a major disagreement between Moscow and Cairo. Soviet officials have tried to assure the world that the postponement was due strictly to an illness of Mr. Brezhnev. The exact reasons for the delay are still not known, but today's front-page news reports a new agreement for the Soviets to supply Egypt with large shipments of sophisticated weapons, including the MiG-23 aircraft. There is still hope that Henry Kissinger can take advantage of the delay in Brezhnev's visit and bring about an agreement between Israel and Egypt that would involve a second-stage pullback in Sinai. The Palestinian Liberation Organization is continuing in its efforts to kill and maim innocent Israeli civilians. A bomb exploded yesterday in downtown Jerusalem. The PLO news agency in Beirut boasted that the PLO set off the bomb and that a number of Israelis had been killed and wounded. Fortunately, in truth, no one was injured by the explosion. Leader of the PLO, Yasser Arafat, said yesterday that he knows Israel possesses 5 atomic bombs. He went on to defy Israel and the United States by saying, quote, "We also have weapons with which to face Israel and America. We have the weapons of oil and capital." He went on to say that the PLO would continue their revolution. Their, quote, "revolution" being the murder of innocent Israeli women and children. The immediate hope is that some kind of agreement can be reached between Israel and Egypt before long. The current no peace, no war situation is only serving to increase tension and keep the Israeli and Arab governments from turning their attention to their long neglected internal problems. This is Mark Armstrong, Jerusalem.
And the point is, for the Israelis beleaguered on all sides by oil-rich and weapons-rich Arabs, that their own domestic problem is absolutely just so enormous you can't even define it. We think inflation is out of hand in the United States, and it is. You ought to see what some of the prices are in Israel today. It is a miracle that those people can survive at all. The government is down the drain, virtually, in its amount of money that it has available to continue this enormous expenditure for the commodities that Israel also needs to import. The terrible situation there in transportation and its roads and the whole situation of the country is almost like a wartime, desperate situation. Very few people understand. Well, it's a crazy upset situation right now in the Middle East with Israel's very existence, up for grabs, it seems, being threatened almost daily, it seems, beleaguered. Now the point of view seems to be that the United States is giving in to a good bit of oil blackmail, has changed its policy significantly toward Israel, trying to lean on Israel to get it to give in. Who knows what talks are going on behind the scenes between Mr. Kissinger and Israeli leadership. We don't really know why Soviet party boss Brezhnev canceled his visit. Maybe he's ill, maybe not. Maybe he's waiting to see. But when they say they're going to give additional sophisticated weapons and even MiG-23s, which, by the way, are superior to anything the United States has ever produced, they're something like 3.5 Mach, 3.5 times the speed of sound, then I think we can all see that the Middle East is again becoming, as it has been for several years, an armed camp. Talk now of war being inevitable is on almost every street of every major capital in the world. I got a report that the average person over in France, actually one out of three, maybe not an average, but about a third of them, see that during 1975 there's going to come some kind of a war in the Middle East because of the price of oil. People in Europe, people in the United States, people in the Middle East themselves continually talk about the almost inevitability of a war coming in the Middle East. And here's this Bible prophecy in Luke 21 and verse 20. It says, when you see Jerusalem compassed with armies, then know that the desolation thereof is nigh. In the broader sense, Jerusalem is right now compassed with armies because of the tremendous arms possessed by the Arab countries that continually and completely surround the nation. It's about time you took a look at what Bible prophecy says and listen to what Jesus said in verse 36 of that same chapter. Watch you therefore, and pray always that you might be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass, and to stand before the Son of Man. The only way you can watch is to know exactly what is happening from the broad overview, the perspective of Bible prophecy. I knew 10 years, 15 years, and longer ago that all world attention was going to be zeroed in on the Middle East because of a combined political as well as religious problem. And I have been saying so by the hundreds of times. Those days are here. Our newspapers are filled with the problems now in the Middle East, exactly as this program foretold. It's time you knew exactly what to expect from here. If you get your name on a mailing list of The Plain Truth, coming out now twice a month, tabloid size, newspaper print, twice the articles, twice the impact, you're going to see from all parts of the world incredible inside understanding from the true overview of Bible prophecy of these world events and how they all fit together. And all you need to do is to request it by sending your letter to Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. We need that. That's all. There is no cost, but tell us the name of the radio station to which you've been listening, the call letters, and then send your letter to Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.